I am joined by a former guest, personally my favorite guest we've had on the podcast, Justin Havens. Justin, how have you been?
Oh, it's hard to be not good with that sort of intro. Very generous. I've been great. Fun start to the baseball season. Yeah, man, it's all been good.
Yeah, I'm ready to talk some more baseball. I had a great time last time, and I'm sure I'll say the same thing after this, but let's just jump right into it. First thing we got on the list. Biggest surprises, letdowns of the season. That includes players, teams, etc. I think the listeners know where I'm going to go with this, so you can go first.
So I will let's go to the letdowns first. Just get the big one out of the way. Team-wise, I mean, for me, it has to be the Boston Red Sox. There's no other team that has underperformed its expectations anywhere near what we thought the Red Sox would be this year. To put it into a little bit of perspective, entering the season, Fangraphs had them at 91% to make the postseason and 35% to win the division. Obviously, a very competitive division, 35% still pretty healthy. They're already down to 51% to make the playoffs and 15% to win the division. So the idea that we're 3 weeks into the baseball season and those numbers have changed, but as of right now, the numbers would suggest that the Red Sox are a coin flip to make the postseason, I think would be mind-blowing to anybody based on preseason expectations. So that's an easy answer for me on the downside for teams.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you. I had big, big expectations for the Red Sox going into the season. But it's kind of what I've drawn this parallel. It's basically like the start of the Celtics season without the whole, like, Kyrie drama. So, yeah, I have no idea what's going on, but for sure they are my biggest letdown.
I mean, listen, like, nobody's saying that they aren't still really talented or that they aren't one of the five or six best teams in the American League. Like, there's still a lot of, like, bad to mediocre at best teams that reside in the American League. So there's, like, there's plenty of opportunity for them to right this ship. But like what's their run different? It's negative 42 through 19 games. And Sarah Langs of MLB.com had a great stat that they've only had three seasons in the like 120 year history of the Boston Red Sox or of the Red Sox that where they've had a worse run differential through 19 games. So it's not like they're 1-7 in one run games, you know, sort of rocky start. It's like they're getting clobbered, and while you can expect some of that to turn around, like it's been ugly so far.
Yeah, and it's just like ridiculous. And I know that, you and I talked about this before we went on air, but I guess this could be a letdown in many people's eyes, depending on how you look at it. Dustin Pedroia, his health does not look good. He hurt his knee. I've read mixed reports. Some reporters have said that it's not that serious. Some say that it could be the end of his season and career. But they put him on the DL or IL, whatever you want to call it. But it just doesn't look good for Pedroia. And I saw your tweet last night. And I thought that was great. What are your thoughts on the whole Pedroia situation?
So, like, I think we have this expectation that all players who were great at baseball at one point in time will age gracefully and, will make it to age 38 and that'll just kind of be the natural death of the ball player sort of thing. And that's just not, I mean, I know you know this, but that's not just how it works out all the time. And Pedroia played a style that took a toll on his body. He's not exactly a formidable, like, frame of a human being. Like, the idea that he might break down in his age 32 or 33 season almost for good, I don't think is that crazy of an idea. So I'm not really – I hate to start this podcast off with so much negativity, but, like, I'm not super optimistic that there's ever going to be – a version of Pedroia that is simultaneously effective and healthy. And that's not to say that, like, he's never going to contribute anything of note ever again. But, like, if you told me that Dustin Pedroia was, like, essentially out of baseball by this time next year or towards the end of next season, like, that would not surprise me even a little bit, and there's no shame in that. Like, he's had a great career. He won an MVP. He's won multiple World Series. The tweet that you referenced at the beginning, like, I just couldn't – they're not exactly the same because Biggio had more speed and played over the diamond a little bit throughout his career. But, you know, I think there's a parallel to be drawn between him and Craig Biggio statistically. Like, through their age 32 seasons, I tweeted last night, they both had about 51 wins above replacement. And Pedroia has essentially stopped adding to that over the two-plus seasons since. And Biggio was still accumulating, like, low-level all-star seasons several times after that. So, you know, I think he'll obviously always be a Red Sox legend and an incredible personality for the game. But I think the Dustin Pedroia era is essentially
over. And I'm totally with you. We had a few guests on the podcast over the offseason, and, you know, their expectations for Pedroia weren't the same as mine. You know, I saw him last year try to come back from that knee issue, and I just did not see it panning out the way that many fans wanted it and expected it to. And at this point, like you said, if you told me, you know, in a year that he's done, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And a quick question for you: him trying to come back repeatedly and getting hurt, is that, like, kind of damaging his, like, legacy?
I don't think so. I think it'll be one of those things that's, like, not irritating. It's like it doesn't make you feel great in the present. But, like, 5 years from now, when he makes his first visit, like, back to Fenway for whatever championship anniversary celebration you guys are doing at that point, it'll literally be completely forgotten. Like, I don't think this is going to have any impact on his legacy as it relates to the Red Sox. Like, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer baseball-wise, but he's a Red Sox Hall of Famer, and he was an integral part of their championships. And, like, for, you know, while he would never overshadow Ortiz, I think there was a stretch there where he was actually one of the biggest personalities on the team, if not the. So I don't think this will ever really be remembered when people are looking back on Dustin Pedroia's
career. I'm totally with you there. So to move on to the biggest surprises.
Yep.
I mean, who surprised you so far this season?
So on the positive end, we'll go there first. Cody Bellinger. Now, that may sound silly because, like, oh yeah, Cody Bellinger is great. That surprised you. It does honestly surprise me a little bit. Like, there was a pretty stark difference between his rookie 2017 season and last year. Like, I think you can make a credible case that, like, to some degree, pitchers, like, not found him out, but, like, definitely exposed weaknesses. Like, you saw it in the 2017 postseason where they just loaded up on lefties against the guy, and he was, like, abysmal during the postseason and World Series specifically. And I think he was a huge question for me. Like, is he going to be just, like, a good player with, like, spurts of lots of pop, or is he going to be, like, a great player and possibly the most important position player piece on the Dodgers? And I think he's answering that pretty emphatically. Obviously, his, you know, video game stat line, 432, 512, 919, he leads baseball position players in F4 as of this morning. He's making more contact in the zone, and that's kind of, in addition to that, he's kind of compensated for the drop in pure power that he experienced from 17 to 18. So that's a good surprise for me, and it's also very fun to watch. On the negative side, for player-wise, Jose Ramirez, I root for Cleveland. It's been hard to watch. He's been, like, one of the worst position players in baseball so far this season. And what's additionally troubling is that if you go back to, like, the beginning of August last year, August 1st, he's slashing 192, 308, 345. So it's not necessarily just a small sample size at this point. Like, I'm not totally off the wagon because he has as many strikeouts as walks as he does over that span. So he hasn't, like, completely deteriorated. But, like, the lack of pop is really troubling. And the Indians, having spent no resources whatsoever filling out their lineup, need him and Lindor to perform at a star level. He's been obviously nowhere near that. I would also nominate Jurickson Profar. I thought he was going to continue on the breakout that he had last year. He has not done that yet. I'm still optimistic on that because his strikeout rate is actually stable, and his batting average on balls in play is incredibly low. Part of that is a lot of infield flies, which is not good, but too early, obviously, to pull the plug. And then positive team. To me, I think it has to be the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't think there are a lot of teams drastically outperforming. Like, obviously, the Rays are much better or have been the best team in baseball. Nobody would have said that, but I think everybody knew the Rays were really good. The Mariners have gotten off to a hot start, but I don't know that anybody thinks that's super sustainable, and it's already started to slide back. But I think the Pirates, I didn't really expect anything from them this year, and there's no question that I undersold the rotation. Like, if Archer is going to be close to what he was in Tampa in his prime, and Taillon, who I think everybody expected to take the next step, if those two are flanked by, like, if all of a sudden Jordan Lyles, Joe Musgrove are really good, like, that obviously changes the dynamics of your rotation, and Trevor Williams continues to be one of the most overlooked good starting pitchers in baseball. So I'd say those are my surprises.
Yeah, and you pretty much nailed it with Bellinger. I had him on my list. He leads the league in almost every, like, offensive statistical category, and even some defense. Like, he's just on a tear right now, and it's super fun to watch. Biggest surprise.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch him and Yelich. I mean, Yelich's home run was not necessarily super meaningful, given that they were still down two after he hit it. But it was cool to see, like, those two hyped up before the game, and both of them deliver with
homers. Yeah, exactly. Life. And yeah, on the team side, I would have to say the Rays. The Rays kind of have surprised me this season. I did not expect them to come out and firing on all cylinders, basically. And I don't know if you check up on Baseball Savant regularly, but the Rays are up there in, like hard-hitting ball contact. I mean, just a ton of categories, and they're just, you know, they're on a tear right now, and they've surprised me so far this season.
Yeah, I think they've been tremendous. I think we need to consider the idea that they really are one of the best teams in baseball, and while they probably won't continue winning it, like, whatever the 125 win clip that they're at right now, this could be a 100 win team. And it's possible that if the Red Sox and the Yankees continue in the Yankees side, their incredible injury rash, and on the Red Sox side, mostly just bad performance. If that continues, like, into the beginning of May, like, the Rays may have established a lead that is nearly impossible to catch, despite as good as those teams are. And that would create some incredible drama if the Red Sox and Yankees were essentially battling for, I mean, maybe two, but maybe one wild card spot.
All right, so big, big, big headline coming out of the last couple days. During the Royals-White Sox game the other night, a bat flip led to a bench brawl. You know, after that, you just get a bunch of opinions on Twitter. Analysts saying, you know, how bat flips are ruining the game and how the MLB needs to do something about it. You know, it's kind of getting out of hand. Justin, what are your thoughts on the whole situation? I saw your tweet last night, and I loved it. I retweeted it right away as soon as I saw it. I was laughing out loud when I read it.
There is, to me, this is like as one-sided as a conversation gets. Like, anybody who is out there saying that bat flips are ruining the game is literally displaying themselves as irrelevant moving forward for everybody to see. Like, it's just a losing battle for lots of different reasons. The main reason is that the go-to is act like you've been there, right? And or you have 10 career home runs, why are you celebrating? Here's the deal. We all know that that is obviously an unenforceable, constantly moving, impossible to know standard, because we're not going to pause the game after the home run is hit and say, you have 6 years of service time and you have 5.8 years of service time. Okay, you can celebrate the home run. Like, it's just fucking so stupid that, like, Randall Grichuk tweeted out, he got owned. I saw Danny Cannell, Dallas Braden owned his ass. And it was just like, everybody who tweeted that stuff was getting ratioed. And I think that's like, there's no question that the groundswell is in favor of more celebration, more personality, more expression because it just generates excitement within the game. I'm not for brawls. I don't really care about that kind of stuff, but I think you're going to see less and less of that as this becomes more accepted, because there's no question. It seems like we're at like an inflection point right now. There's no question that if you go back 5 or 10 years, the sentiment has absolutely positively changed. Like what Tim Anderson did, he looked at his own dugout, right? There was no, like, it wasn't even necessarily an egregious bat flip. We've seen much worse. Some of the most memorable moments we've seen over the last couple, 5, 10 years have been generated from bat flips. Bryce Harper's bat flip might be the seminal moment of this season so far. Jose Bautista's bat flip might be the most like widely recognized baseball moment, like socially in the last social media. Mm. I mean, of the last 5 or 10 years in some corners of the game, like Machado made a great point. He said, I have a bat. If I went out to the mound and I hit you with the bat in response to like you striking me out or something like that, he would be suspended for the rest of his life. And he didn't say this, but in reality, he'd probably be arrested too. Mm. It's crazy that the idea that you beat me / I failed at my job and thus I'm going to throw the ball at you, it doesn't really hold up, logically, which is not always in play in baseball, but and B, like, it doesn't hold up in terms of where we're trying to take this game. We don't want players injured on things that are entirely avoidable. To me, you're exposing yourself as a dinosaur if you're taking the position that bat flips are bad for baseball. It just doesn't make any sense.
Thank you. I completely 100% agree with that statement. It's getting ridiculous, you know, these guys that are most likely the guys that are saying that, you know, bat flips are ruining the game are also the people that are saying, you know, baseball's boring and we need to, you know, do something about it. Like you just can't please people, and it's just
it's a racial and generational issue. It's both of those things. Like, and that's not like a political statement, it's just a reality statement. Like old people, like younger people are more or less into this, and there are a lot of cultures that have increased in the percentage of players that are playing in Major League Baseball where this has been ingrained in them since they've started playing the game, and it's excitement. We see that in the World Baseball Classic. And you know what? The thing that everybody loves about the World Baseball Classic is how energetic everybody is about playing in it when the countries aren't the United States, right? So it's fighting against this is a futile task, because we're moving towards bat flips. We're moving towards the league promoting the idea of fun and excitement and let the kids play. Like, okay, not everybody's accepted let the kids play, but we're not going in the opposite direction at this point.
Yeah, for sure. So the last quick question I got for you, Justin, you know, this is a Red Sox podcast, so the listeners want to hear it from a different point of view. Do the Red Sox turn it around?
I think they do. I don't think they win the division at this point, but I do think they make the playoffs if I had to pick. I think the offense, there's no way that Mookie Betts continues to be this sort of player. He is legitimately one of the 5 best position players in the game. The offense as a whole, I think, will improve. I have some concern about Chris Sale specifically, but more in this, not in the sense that he's like dead and broken, but more in the sense that like he's now required in some ways to pitch like a $30 million guy. And I don't know that was necessarily a wise investment beyond this season. But that's kind of like that's not really an issue for the fans necessarily, or for the question of, will they turn this around? Like, I think if Chris Sale can, I think even if he gets back to being like a number 2, quote unquote, for the rest of this season, I think that's enough for the Red Sox to turn it around. But I would say they turn it around. But I think at this point, just reality speaking, they're looking at more like a 90-win team instead of like the 98 or 100-win team that we might have thought entering
Yeah,
the year.
exactly. I'm with you. I hope they can turn it around, but yeah, who knows? We've seen stranger things happen in baseball, and you never know. But Justin, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure talking to you. Hope we can get you on sometime in the future again.